This is Chris Brooks. Thank you for listening to this edition of Equip. Be sure and subscribe for free so that you don't miss an episode. For more information, visit our website, equipradio.org. Chris Brooks here, and I want to thank you for listening to this edition of Equip. Did you know that we are funded by the generosity of listeners just like you? Can you help us? Partner with the ministry of Equip by calling 888-644-4144 or give at equipradio.org.
Please enjoy the following pre-recorded encore presentation of Equipped with Chris Brooks.
Well, hey there, friends. Welcome to another exciting edition of Equip with Chris Brooks. I'm so glad you've tuned in today. Why don't you do me a favor? Strap on your seatbelt. We're going to navigate through the contours of culture, as always, with the lens of the biblical worldview on. But before we do that, let me remind you, this is the day that the Lord has made. He has given it as a gift so that you and I can rejoice and be glad in it. So let's do just that. Let's follow the words of the Apostle Paul. Let's rejoice in the Lord always. And again, I say rejoice. And with that, I welcome you into what will be a very exciting, educational, and hopefully interactive edition of Equip. When I talk about changing cultures and societies, when we think about what leaves a lasting and enduring impact on our community, or how do we solve the issues that our local communities are facing, what comes to mind? For many, they think of civic solutions, having those in office that will manage transformation through the use of public policies. And certainly, the public policy has its place. But more and more, what we are discovering through both empirical research as well as anecdotal stories is that it is the entrepreneurial spirit that brings about transformation and flourishing to communities. It is men and women, both in the for-profit and non-profit social impact sectors of our society, that bring what my guest today calls their redemptive imaginations to the table, that allows us to see not only our communities transform, but the men and women that live within them. Today, maybe you are an entrepreneur. Maybe you are one who lives with innovation, it, literally in your bones, and you have been thinking through, how do I accelerate my ideas? How do I go from imagination to actualization? Well, I'm so glad that you've tuned in today, because I believe my guest and our topic is going to bless you tremendously. My guest today is David Blanchard. David is a name that you should know. His work and impact has influenced the landscape of our many communities through helping entrepreneurial men and women to bring their dreams to reality. David is passionate about encouraging Christian-led entrepreneurship that has a positive impact on society. To this end, he has co-founded and leads Praxis, which works to motivate, educate, and resource Christians to pursue redemptive entrepreneurship, to renew the spirit of the age. Each year, Praxis runs its flagship accelerator programs, equipping leaders from 24 early stage businesses and nonprofits, as well as Praxis Academy, which I love, an undergrad initiative that works with over 50 schools. David is with me now. Hey, Dave, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, and even better to be here with you, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Well, I really appreciate you carving out this time to be with me. Listen, when I think about the work that you guys are doing, nothing short of transformational, and I'm super excited about it, and I'm sure it wakes you up every morning energized as well. Talk about the work of Praxis for those who aren't familiar, your mission, and what you guys are striving to accomplish.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity to share and the encouraging words. We have been around for about 10 years now, and with this idea that we wanted to create a venture building ecosystem, meaning founders, funders, innovators who are really motivated by their faith to love their neighbors and renew culture through their entrepreneurial energy, through ventures that they go out and build. And Over the time of doing that work, I think it's 6 or 7 years in, we came up with this phrase, redemptive entrepreneurship, which really kind of, for us, it's put the mission even clearer on paper and in how we talk to each other about what we think it looks like to be Christian entrepreneurs in the fullest sense of our faith. And over time, our goal and mission is to make this idea of redemptive entrepreneurship commonplace, where Christian entrepreneurs around the world wake up and say, hey, I'm going to go out and I'm going to renew the culture. And I'm going to do that in a community of people who are helping me accomplish things that don't necessarily work in the systems of the world that are set up commonly, but require a different imagination, a bit of what you talked about in your kind intro.
Yeah, let's talk about this redemptive imagination. It is at the core of Praxis and at the core of your heart. So unpack it in its essence, at its very foundational level. What is redemptive imagination, and what does it look like in a community when it's lived out?
Yeah, so I think, you know, it's worth starting with just this common, I think, conversation in culture, which is around ethics, which is an important conversation. And I think, unfortunately, perhaps has been set up as the ultimate goal is for us to be ethical, which is to kind of do the right thing. That is, of course, in contrast to what we call the kind of exploitative way, which is kind of us going out and using the world around us for our own self-gain. I think Google most famously put the "Don't be evil" in their kind of motto and mantra for their own culture, which was to us kind of the ethical bottom, if you will. It's like let's not think about what all the good we could do in the world. Let's just not be bad. And I think this ethical way is, you know, it's taught in our business schools and our law schools, and we've kind of taken this in. And we think, of course, ethics is a really important baseline. We should avoid the exploitative. But for Christians, we have to ask, isn't there something more that the gospel calls us to? When we look at the life of Jesus, it's this radical life of sacrifice and dying to self. And what do we get when we're able to do that, at least in some part of modeling our lives in that way? And that's where this idea of being redemptive comes from. We talk about it as creative restoration through sacrifice. Picking those words carefully, saying that we're creative, we're made in the image of God to build new things, that we can restore things, we can make all things new with him. And that so often that requires us to do this on behalf of others and not for ourselves and sacrifice. And I think if we really embrace that, we can take our entrepreneurial creative ability and go out and really say, you know, we're going to set our eyes on renewing culture in the things we set out to do. We're going to bless the people who we work with. We're going to try to contribute in a way that really makes a difference in the culture that we all have to live in and for generations to come.
You know, it seems to me, Dave, that a lot of people that I know that are driven by their faith when it comes to thinking about how to leverage that to impact society, often it leads them to serving in the local church. Obviously, I serve in a local church, and I love that. I think there's space for that. But I find myself more and more questioning, why is it that we feel that if we want to leverage our faith for the good of culture, for the transformation of societies, for the flourishing of our communities, that we feel like, okay, that person necessarily has to end up in the local church or pursue a clergy track for their occupation?
Yeah. You know, I think it's with good reason that has been a framework of ours, in the sense that I think what it hints to is we say, you know, we want to undergo a personal transformation that reorients our life towards mission. And for so long, mission meant be a pastor or a missionary. And I think what's really exciting right now about our time, the next generation, is that we are saying yes, and there are different places and contexts and possibilities to be missional. And so much of our world, we realize, that we take in on a daily basis is shaped by the organizations around us. Now, sometimes that's in the sense of a faith-based nonprofit that is collaborating among churches and hopefully and working around the world in different ways. But often that's also business. We know how much the products and services shape us. You know, it's obviously a huge conversation right now around big tech and technology companies and how their products and services have mostly shaped us for the worse. And how do we interact with that? And we need people who are out in those industries building different different ideas, different with different imaginations for what flourishing looks like in the world. And I think if we lose Christians in those spaces or we don't pursue that kind of creativity, we miss opportunities to really bless and love the people around us and really, frankly, make them more open to the gospel in different ways.
Yeah, I feel like your answer is kind of freeing and maybe even liberating to many who are listening to us, who have felt this sense of really living into their faith commitments. They're anchored and in their love for God, their followership of Christ, but yet don't feel like maybe a pastoral call is their call, but feel called to create enterprises and social nonprofits or maybe even businesses. I think that you and your team are helping people to see another pathway. Friends, we're just getting started. I want you to check out our website, learn more about Praxis and the work that Dave Blanchard and his team is doing at equipradio.org. Whatever you do, don't go anywhere. Much more to come next up on Equip with Chris Brooks. Do you want to read the Bible but don't know how to begin? Or maybe you want to get more out of your Bible reading so you can clearly hear God's voice and apply His truth to your life. Dr. Jim Coakley's book, 14 Fresh Ways to Enjoy the Bible, is just what you need. Request your copy with a gift of any amount or support to equip and deepen your passion and understanding of God's Word. Simply call 888-644-4144 or visit equipradio.org. To Equip with Chris Brooks, Dave Blanchard from Praxis is joining me today. We're going to take your questions. All you have to do is go to our social media platforms right now. We'd love to interact with you there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on Facebook and on Twitter at Equip Radio. That's Equipped Radio. Go there now. Also, if you want to learn more about our guests and our resources, go to equipradio.org today. Dave, I want to talk about this redemptive framework just a little bit further. You've said before that there's basically three ways fundamentally that we can kind of go out in the world to work. Talk about those three ways and how they differ.
Yeah, well, I think first to say, as we think about this redemptive framework, you know, there's three considerations for each of us, which is what are we building? How are we doing it? And who are we becoming along that journey? And the answers to those questions shape these three ways to work. That first being this exploitative way, where ultimately we say, I'm going to build whatever will work, and I'm going to use people to help me do that so that I can gain and benefit. And frankly, my objective is to go win in the world. And other people are going to lose, and that's success for me. I think that's the default way of money and mammon that's in the world. A lot of what's actually expected and accepted by business at large in the world, and sometimes that's what is expected of you if you go to work in an enterprise from your bosses or your leadership. It's kind of the water we swim in, if you will. Now, a lot of times I think as Christians, we would say, we don't think we're exploitative. We think we're doing things the right way. But I think, and I hope we can all open our eyes to understand that if we are working in the world, there is exploitation among us, and we are part of that, and we need to root that out and look for the systems we're participating in that promote those things, and maybe some norms that we've accepted or even been educated on along the way that doesn't think in a different way about what we could or should do in the world. That second way of working is an ethical pathway. That's again the idea that we're doing good if we're building things in the world. We are respecting the people around us, treating them okay, and as long as we're improving as a person, that's enough for us as individuals. And then this final way that we've talked about of being redemptive in the world, which is really saying, how can we renew culture through what we make? How do we really bless the people around us? Do the people who we work for and with think they're better for working with us because of how we do that? And we have to accept, I think, this is probably the hardest part of our faith and the gospel and how we do this. We have to accept that what that fundamentally means is dying to self and saying, hey, this is not about me. This is about how I can serve and love those who are closest to me and maybe those who are far away from me as well.
Yeah, I love that. And you can make a profit doing that as well. There's no sin in that. I can imagine that a lot of folks who are listening to us, Dave, would say, hey, I'm an ethical person. Isn't that enough? I love that you helped us to expand our vision and maybe even raise the bar. Give me some examples of, or maybe one that stands out in your mind of someone who moved from just ethical work to redemptive work.
Yeah, sure. I think about a board member of ours, actually. His name's Mike Bontrager, who started a company called Chatham Financial about 30 years ago. They're now a global firm, 500 folks across 9 offices. And frankly, he was in a complex derivatives business in the financial industry. And something he knew, and he wanted to start a small business, and he started doing that from his garage in Kennett Square, Pennsylvania. And over time, and I think it was about 5 or 6 years in, he realized that the greatest breaking point in difficulty in the world of finance was that nobody trusted each other. Everyone was basically out for their own. Even in client relationships, people were saying, we're going to get the most out of this that we can for us. And so through Chatham, through his firm, he really said, you know, our mission is actually to restore trust in finance. And one short story, I was walking with a church friend of mine a few years ago who didn't know that Mike was on our board. And I was telling him this story and he goes, you know what, that's really funny because when I was at this other firm, which I won't name, he's like, I remember when Chatham came into one of our deals and our team said, hey, you know, just so you know, we're not going to make as much money as we would have because now Chatham's here and they're going to tell the truth to everybody about how this all works. And I just thought, wow, like this is very real. And so that's just one example, I think, of someone evolving into a greater understanding of their opportunity to contribute in a redemptive way.
Yeah, I love that you use that example. The financial services world is where I come from before I took the step into pastoral ministry. And there is fundamentally so much distrust. And it's amazing how certain industries have come to accept that as the norm, that it's normative for us to operate this way, that somehow a differentiator would be honesty or integrity in the way that you go about doing business. But let's just talk about this thing called profit, because for a lot of Christians, that sounds like a dirty word somehow. But making profit is not inherently evil, is it?
No. In fact, it is often, and especially, of course, in business, it is the engine for which more redemptive possibility is there. So I think the thing we see that's the most beautiful inside of businesses are folks who are able to align profit and purpose. In fact, my friend Kyle Westway wrote a book called that, where these two things are now coming together in the enterprise. And the more successful the enterprise is in selling its products and services, the more that good is going out in the world. And I think that's an evolution of how we think about business today as well. When I think maybe our previous framework was the business tries to make as much money as possible, and then maybe the owners give some away, either in their own generosity or maybe even in certain cases to kind of right some of the wrongs that they felt like they had done along the way. So it's a very, very exciting opportunity for businesses to create, to profit from that creation, and see that as a means to an end for more good in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if you, depending on how you look at empowering and building equity and wealth for your employees, it becomes a phenomenal way of empowering multi-generational wealth for your employees. Mm-hmm. And those who work for you. I know so much of the work that we do are in urban areas where yeah. there's a tremendous wealth gap. But when we think about companies that are sharing equity with their staff, it's an awesome thing. There was a grocery store we recently went to visit in San Francisco, my team and I, because we wanted to see what they were doing. And they were allowing people from the community to invest and get equity shares of the grocery store. And so folks are investing in a local grocery store, sharing in the distribution of profits. It changes the whole relationship with that local grocery store. It transforms the community and creates a great sense of ownership. I want to just for a moment put you in a room with about 50 business owners. And they're trying to navigate through post-COVID, if we want to call it post-COVID realities or mid-COVID realities, wherever we're at with that. Looking at the current landscape of challenges, what do you want to address with them? What do you think are the greatest challenges that business owners face? And conversely, what do you think are the greatest opportunities?
Sure. Well, I think right now we're having a lot of conversations just around culture. So culture is one of those things that emerges inside of an enterprise over time, and usually through by virtue of place and workflows and some things that kind of provide this cohesive direction. Now, that has obviously been upended for a certain number of groups that are no longer coming into offices and that sort of thing. Of course, grocery stores, like you mentioned, have very similar work environments, because of course everybody needs to be there to get things done. But for those folks who are working in or leading groups that now no longer gather in the same way, I would just encourage everyone to think about not trying to preserve what was and not pretending like it will continue to exist, but actually trying to very intentionally spending time with your team, understanding how to redesign your organizational rhythms, meeting structures, expenditures to be together the right amount and know each other in sometimes different mediums. And even just, you know, a couple of things we're doing at Praxis, like on Mondays, we don't have any meetings so people can get a break from Zoom. Once a month, we have everyone from around the country, 18 people now fly into one location to spend one overnight together. So we can continue to build relational equity with each other that I think then drives missional possibility. So I see that as both a great risk and a great opportunity, frankly, because the folks who do that the best are going to retain talent in this time where we're all hearing about the great resignation and people saying, hey, you know, I don't want to do that anymore. And I especially don't want to do it if what was ordered before is now just chaos. So that's in that bucket. If on the opportunities and possibilities side, I think there are many things to consider there. But I think this is going to be a time where there's some enterprises that are going to say what we did locally in the pre-COVID times, we've understood now how that can apply at scale in a new way because of technology or because of demand. And certain organizations are going to make that leap over into a new way of working, often with maybe the the part of their organization, whether this is a nonprofit or a business, that was particularly demanded and that they built competencies around over these last couple of years. So, of course, we're seeing this in spaces like education the most, where COVID was basically an accelerant. And for those who can step into that and bring talent in and capital in to help help really establish that as not just a temporary thing, but an ongoing opportunity, this is going to be a good time.
Yeah, I love that. And I so appreciate you helping us to look at challenges as opportunities. You're 100% right. There's an opportunity right now to really rewrite our story, reinvent the way that we deliver to the market those goods, products, services that are so desperately needed. And I love your focus on culture, because at the end of the day, that's what defines our organization's culture. But there's so many challenges that are around that. So when we come back, I want to talk to Dave about what are some of the common mistakes that he's seeing good entrepreneurs, redemptive entrepreneurs make, and how we can overcome that. And I also love to hear from David what is the most rewarding aspect of his work with Praxis. Maybe you are wanting to learn more about how you can potentially become a part of the Praxis ecosystem. Find out more at equipradio.org, as we have links to their website. Whatever you do, don't go anywhere. Much more to come next up on Equip with Chris Brooks.
You're listening to a pre-recorded encore presentation of Equipped with Chris Brooks.
Welcome back to Equip with Chris Brooks, having a fascinating conversation with Dave Blanchard, passionate and about encouraging Christian-led entrepreneurship that has a positive impact on society. He co-founded and leads Praxis. It's a great community for you to consider being a part of if you've been blessed with an entrepreneurial calling. Why don't you find out more at equipradio.org. Don't forget, our social media platforms are available to you as well, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at Equip Radio on Facebook and Twitter. Leave your comments there and your questions, and we'll try our best to ask Dave for thoughtful answers to your thoughtful questions. Dave, as we go back into this conversation, I want to hear from you. Man, how does Praxis define success? When you and Josh Kwan started the organization, how did you define success, and has that definition changed over the years?
I would say when we started, of course, like any new venture, success was survival to the next year. I think, seriously, one of the things I tell people often is, you know, you, in some sense, as an entrepreneur, are always designing for a need that you felt most deeply. And as someone who started a number of different businesses over the years, I think I just said, gosh, I wish I had had Christian mentors who'd lived this stuff out. I wish I'd had values aligned capital that was asking me what was the most good we could do in the world with some of those earlier enterprises. And so I think success for me and for Josh was saying, how can we encourage these entrepreneurs, help them feel like they're not just alone in their vision and just kind of fighting the systems of the world to hold on to what their missional intent was. And then also too, I think, particularly for Josh, who at the time was coming from a family foundation that was looking for top Christian leaders and could not often find them to invest in and to fund and to donate to. We wanted to create more visibility to a pipeline, you know, what investors would call deal flow. And that's one of the things that I think has been most exciting to see over the last 10 years is now we've got this portfolio of, you know, 200 ventures employing 5,000 people across 44 different countries. And no longer do people, as they did when we were first talking to them about the idea, ask us, are there enough Christians in the world doing interesting things to get behind? Now it's, wow, which one should I choose? And how do I get involved? And how do I help these inspiring next generation leaders do that work? So that's been so exciting to see.
That's great. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I was remembering the second part of your question, which is how do we define that today? And I think what What we want to see today is really, can we continue to build a community that really acts as what we call a demonstrated apologetic to the world, where people look at that and they say, you know, that right there is the body of Christ doing his work in the world with all these different callings. But that's a beautiful expression, kind of a hermeneutic through community, if you will.
Yeah, I love it. And I'm super grateful that you guys are really a platform that puts on display the beautiful array of creative and innovative men and women who are bringing and leveraging their faith in the marketplace and in communities that are really making a difference. Super grateful for that. What are some of the common mistakes that you wish you could warn even those who are redemptively minded entrepreneurs that you often see them make?
Yeah, I think two things come to mind. So the first is very, very close to each of them, which is in their co-founder relationships or their founding team relationships. I think the often unstated reality of why enterprises fail is conflict at the founder level. And I think as Christians, we have a particularly great opportunity to, like we're supposed to do in marriage, put Christ at the center of that relationship.
Sure.
And let him lead us in things like how we forgive each other and our prayer lives with each other and opportunities like that that can, frankly, transcend conflict that is inevitable and help us be closer. That's a huge, frankly, advantage for the Christian founder. Should we lean into that and not fall into the traps of power plays and arguments and so on? So lean in on that from day one, make that part of the culture. The second thing I think about is related to the topic of ambition. I think so often founders are really taking in this thread of ambition from the world, which suggests that it's really about the size of the thing you're building, the pace with which you build it, the exit price with which you sell it if you're in business, and in many ways become very pragmatic as they build the enterprise towards that end goal versus for many of them, what I would say a founding ambition was a particularly gnarly, thorny area of impact they were trying to take on. Mm-hmm. And it is very possible to lose that. In fact, I think there's in some ways a positive thread of, you know, the organizations that pivot and change what they're doing. They're trying to find a product market that fit where, you know, whatever they create can grow. And of course that's necessary. But I think in that, a lot of times people just say, well, ultimately what I want to do is have something that people deem successful versus really making that difference and that change over the long haul, which is hard.
Yeah, it is. Dave Blanchard is my guest today. Find out more about Praxis and the work that they're doing at our website, equipradio.org. So let's talk about the accelerator. How does it work, Dave, for those who are interested?
Yeah, so we run two different programs on that front every year, one for 12 nonprofits that are Christian-led and one for 12 businesses that are Christian-led. They're around the world. The organizations that apply and that we select. We run that application process starting here in March for what is ultimately a program kickoff in September, where entrepreneurs attend three different gatherings with us. We bring in 30 really amazing mentors who've lived this stuff out, built organizations to scale, a lot of times are funding these organizations, and put them all in a room together. And honestly, a lot of it is letting the Holy Spirit work in relationships. And what our objective is to help these founders first really orient themselves to what God's calling is for them in the enterprise, to put great people around them who can walk along with them in a longer term journey there and provide values aligned capital that they don't feel like they're in conflict with in that redemptive mission. Those folks, of course, become a part of our ongoing community that meets every year at our summit in May. And as I mentioned previously, we've got a couple hundred now who I think provide this really rich peer community where there's almost always someone in the community who's gone through whatever challenge you're facing next.
Yeah, I think that that's great. And are the groups learning from each other? Is the nonprofit learning from the for-profit groups, or are they kind of tracking separately?
They run on separate tracks until that final event, where they both get to present to our community their 4-minute pitches at our summit, and then they get to meet each other. And it's always a beautiful thing. I think, you know, there are some folks who think, you know, business is the only way. I'm not going to do that nonprofit stuff. And there are some folks who think like nonprofit is really where it's at, and you know, businesses are just trying to make money. And then they meet each other, and they're like, oh man, everybody is doing this beautiful work, and we end up with you know, businesses that are funding the nonprofits and so on. It's really a wonderful thing to see.
Yeah, when we come back, I want to take a short break, but when we come back, I'd love for you to maybe identify how you help people to go through that discernment process to know whether or not what they're dreaming of is a is better fit for the nonprofit or the for-profit sector. Because I would imagine that for a lot of people, that is a coming to point. And maybe some people, based off of level of exposure, only were exposed to one way of thinking about things. And I love you, saying that, man, once you meet each other, you realize maybe we're not as far apart as we think we are. Listen, we're going to take one final break, but these breaks give you a couple of opportunities. First, to be able to learn more about Dave and Praxis, but also to support the program. If we've been a blessing to you, if you've enjoyed over time our guests, our resources, and our wisdom here at Equip, if it's been an empowerment to you, can you stand with us prayerfully and financially? Find out how you can do that by going to our website, equipradio.org, or if it's easier, dial this number, 888-644-4144. That's 888-644-4144. Whatever you do, don't go anywhere. We're going to land this plane in the heart of the gospel right after this. Next up on Equip. This daily program is fully devoted to coming alongside listeners like you to give you the tools needed for a successful walk with God. As one of our loyal listeners, would you be willing to become an Equipper? Your monthly contribution will be applied to equipping others all across the country. Plus, as an Equipper, I'll send you regular emails that contain brief pastoral messages prepared just for you. To become an Equipper now, call 888-644-4144 or go online to equipradio.org. So much to say, not enough time. Dave Blanchard is my guest. This is the rapid fire round. Dave, I'm going to throw out some questions. You give us brief answers so we can get as many of these great questions in as possible. But again, you can find out more about Praxis at equipradio.org. All right, Dave, how do you help someone to discern whether or not their concept, their idea is best suited for profit or nonprofit?
Yeah, my rapid fire answer on that one is really discern what type of capital you need to launch the enterprise and who's most likely to provide it to you. That should be the defining reason that you choose a structure, I believe.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's great and insightful. How are you helping those that come through your accelerator work through the social issues, such as diversity, equity, and inclusion? How are you helping Christian entrepreneurs think about redemptive ways they can lean into these realities?
Yeah, the good news that as I think those became issues that felt like some organizations were going to address at certain times. And now I think almost every leader understands that every organization should be addressing those. And we want to equip them to do that, particularly through a theological lens and a listening lens, I would say. So there's a great opportunity in our program for mentors to come speak into that, who are living that out. And sometimes people like our friend David Bailey at Erebon, who specialize in that and come in and talk through those issues. In an environment often where sometimes it feels like you need a one-on-one conversation to really ask questions and talk about practical ways to really make a difference there. So important.
What about self-care? When you're working with entrepreneurs, one of the realities is crashing and burning on a personal level, not leaving margin for yourself. As Christians, we are called to guard our hearts, to till the garden of our souls. So what are you guys doing to help entrepreneurs to think through self-care?
Such a huge one. I think there's a little bit of a mentality of, you know, just gut it out for as long as you need to, and then you can kind of hit escape. In reality, that's just not true. You need sustainability now to build with a really, you know, big vision to set those practices in place. So what we do, we have actually something we call the Rule of Life for Redemptive Entrepreneurs. It's a small booklet that goes through six areas we think are the biggest temptations for entrepreneurs, biggest risks. And one of the things we talk about in there is time and practicing the rhythm of work and rest that really allow us to tend to our heart, soul, mind, and strength. So our kind of baseline on that is asking the question, hey, do you Sabbath? And encouraging our fellows, actually giving them permission to take a day off every week feels like a radical thing for many of them, and something that really starts to give them life and bring things like play back into their life, which then actually build creativity on the other side.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a huge risk, right? And nothing is a greater variable for undermining or seeing the success of an enterprise than the team, the founder that leads it. And if you crash and burn, you can be assured your organization is probably going to crash and burn as well. I guess as we close, I think about the amount of resiliency that's needed for the times that we live in, maybe even more than what's been needed in a generation or two. What type of advice do you give entrepreneurs, redemptive innovators, about how they can build resiliency, not just for themselves, but for the entire org?
Yeah. say two things here. One, I'm going to reference actually a pastoral study because I think it's relevant for entrepreneurs. The Lilly Foundation did what I think was a 81-year longitudinal study on pastoral health in the country. And they came away saying the one thing that pastors need for health is peer community. And it's the hardest thing for them to find is other pastors, because there's really not a lot of folks who they feel like they can talk to and relate to and share with their lives and really truly be known. I think what we've found in 10 years of working with entrepreneurs is that the peer community is actually the most powerful thing. So go out and find friends who understand what you go through, whether it's Praxis or another cohort or a local meetup. Find people who you can talk to and share with them. You know, the joke in entrepreneurship is the question is, how's the business going? And the answer is always great, and it's never true. And so you want people who you can be honest with and answer that world and say, you know, it's been an incredibly tough week. I've got two people who just left. I've got, you know, so on and so forth, right? So just really encourage people in that way to find that peer community.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is that so much of this we find in the Gospels. And I think about the community of the disciples, what Jesus called around him. Obviously, he's the Son of God. He could operate on his own. He is a second person in the Trinity. He didn't need to have that community as we think of need. But what a beautiful model that lays at the foundation of the church, that the 12 wouldn't be sent out by themselves. They'd be sent out together. And that causes me to think about the Praxis community and maybe the greatest thing that you guys have built over your time as an organization is this community. Now, and I just would love for you to maybe share just how that community has helped you and how they help each other.
Yeah, well, you know, I would say the community has been the most encouraging thing to me. When we started Praxis, I literally didn't know anyone we work with today. Josh Kwan provided much of that. And I think in a time where our faith is confusing in a sense of what people are saying about it in the world, and sometimes how our church bodies are lacking unity at times, and so on. We need Christians to spur each other on to good deeds, and we need to find communities that help us do that. And so that's been a huge blessing to me. And I should side note there, I love my church and find great joy in it too. But I would say how we support each other, I think, is at large in the Praxis community through generosity of everything, meaning I think there's a general feeling of this community being a safety net of sorts for the entrepreneur taking great risk, both in a future opportunity if this doesn't work out, and encouragement and sometimes resources to go pursue those trickier things. And then at the same time, just a generosity of advice, time, energy, encouragement. The entrepreneurial journey is so lonely, so difficult. Honestly, it's not a vocation I would recommend if you're not called into it because of those things. But if you are, make sure you have a group of people who are around you who get it and want to just help you however they can. It's a beautiful thing to witness, frankly.
Well, you guys have done a great job, man, and you are off the hot seat officially. I am so grateful for you joining me, man. Thankful for the work you're doing. Hey, folks, it is application time around Praxis Labs, so now is the time for you to apply. If you are doing great work, if you have a phenomenal concept that you have been kind of piloting and developing in a infancy form in your community and you love to tell the world about it, why don't you consider finding out more about Dave and the work that Praxis is doing at equipradio.org. We have links to their site. Dave, thank you so much for joining me, brother.
Thanks again, Chris. God bless.
Folks, listen, you can find out more at equipradio.org. Also, I'd love for you to consider supporting the program prayerfully and financially. If we've been a blessing to you, stand with us at equipradio.org. Until we're together again next time, remember, Equip with Chris Brooks is a production of Moody Radio, a ministry of Moody Bible Institute. What does it mean to follow Jesus in a nation where most people claim to be Christians, but so few actually live like Jesus? Every day on Equip, we're answering that question through biblical conversations and current issues that matter. Join us daily on Equip as we learn to live out our faith together. Give a monthly gift and become an Equipper. And as a bonus, you'll receive a special insider benefit and access to additional resources. Call 888-644-4144 or go online to equipradio.org.